pew, 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 laser sounds.
Explosion noises.
Hey, everybody. I am Chad Wesley Smith, and this is another episode of the Jug Life Podcast, joined, as always, by the notorious M-A-X Maximilian Montana Ada.
That's me.
Can you change your last name to start with an M as well?
Maida. That's actually a thing.
What is it?
I think it's like a car dealership. I've seen license plates, like the license plate frame, I guess, because it's important to frame a license plate.
Oh, yeah.
That says Maida on it. M Ada. Hmm. I'm confused. I'm curious what it is. Marissa told me Ada is it means dad.
Yeah. In Basque,
yeah. It also means, it's like, I think it means Hades in some other language.
What Etruscan. Is it in Italian?
I don't know what it means in Italian.
Because you're Italian, right?
It's Italian, yeah. From Calabria, the toe of the boot. That's what my grandfather used to say.
Right.
From the toe of the boot. So, kicking off this Jug Life podcast.
But back to that Maida thing. What about Miatas? Because that's like...
Oh, Miata.
Maida just mixed around.
I feel like
bit.
Miatas were associated too heavily with Corky Romano. And so I don't think I would ever be comfortable driving one.
They don't give you them for free?
They don't. No, I don't have any stake or ownership in the Miata as a vehicle or Mazda as a company.
Mm. Well, next time.
Yeah.
Next time.
Next life.
So today we're going to be answering some fans' questions from, what's that place? Instagram. And we were hoping to do this as a live episode, but the internet was not cooperating with that. So you just have to listen to us instead. So before we begin, thank you to Virus International, Grand Sports Nutrition, Trifecta Nutrition. You can use Jug for Virus, Jug 10 for Grind, TrifectaNutrition.com/juggernaut, as well as this week's sponsor, Milligrams and Kilograms. The more you take, the more you make. It's a lifestyle. Before we get into the Q&A portion of things, though, and I guess on a more serious note, a couple big passings of very very prominent people in the strength world and very important historical figures. From my world of track and field, Brian Oldfield, former world record holder in the shot put, the first man to ever throw 75 feet, passed away a few days ago. Really someone who's just one of the most tremendous athletes of all time. You know, he sort of revolutionized the spin technique where almost everyone was doing the glide, and he realized that, you know, doing more of a discus style, you know, kind of adapting the discus technique with his incredible athleticism, elasticity, explosiveness, and sort of revolutionized the shot putting world with that. And he's someone who, beyond just the shot put and you know, big performances in the discus as well, was just a freakish athlete. Video of him dunking a 16-pound shot put. This is for a guy, you know, 6'4", 275, 280 pounds. Not regarded as like an overly strong weight room guy, but a pretty famous video of him beating the women's 100-meter world record holder in a 40 or 60-meter dash and like pulling away from her in it. He you know, talked about high jumping, I think 6'9" is the number I heard.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And then beyond all of that, it's just sort of a very classic 70s, 80s strength sports wild man type of figure. You know, a guy who every thrower from that era would have stories about, you know, him basically showing up to track meets reeking of Jack Daniels. Like put
I don't
a
know if it's reeking is the right word, but exuding the perfume of Jack Daniels.
Oozing? You only ooze confidence or... charisma or pus, I think. and, you know, then putting his cigarette down on the side of the ring, going in, throwing 72 feet.
That's just fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It really is.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and the title was A Rebel Muscles In. And yeah. He's in one of the best, you know, short singlet combinations that has ever existed.
The American, the stars. It's a star-spangled singlet.
Yes, it was. And it was the inspiration to my custom Snort Life singlet that Courtney made for me that I wore in Australia. We couldn't find quite the same pattern.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Brian Oldfield, just an iconic figure in track and field, a great athlete, a performer, everything. So condolences to his friends, families, all of his fans, all the people who love watching him do what he did. And I know he was a huge inspiration to shot putters and throwers all over the world. Yeah, just someone who loved what he was doing and who excelled at the highest levels for a very long time, even breaking the American record, the Open American record, as a masters athlete into his 40s.
Really?
Yeah, through like 72 something, maybe 73 when he was 40 or 41 years old.
Wow.
Also last week, the passing of someone, you know, Max has a unique connection to, Ivan Abjayev,
mm-hmm.
famous, infamous weightlifting coach, national team coach for Bulgaria, the developer of the Bulgarian method. He was the mastermind of that whole thing. How was that for you, Max?
Really just like the architect of, you could almost say of modern weightlifting. I mean, not entirely, but I mean, you know, what his contribution to the success of Bulgarian lifting, not just in that time frame, but also in, you know, across the planet and spreading that methodology and what he did around the world. I mean, the success is just monumental. I mean, 12 Olympic champions is unheard of. I mean, and then a combined 100 plus European world champions, that's enormous. That's an insane number of successful lifters under his tutelage. So, I mean, you know, largely infamous in that he was booted out of, you know, Bulgaria was booted out of not maybe three Olympics total. I mean, 88, 2000, and then later they all failed tests in 2008. And then again, 2011, I think. I mean, just notorious, a very notorious group Bulgaria is, but nothing that I think we haven't seen the entire world is partaking in, but his stuff and who he was and everything that he was rooted in, those things were fundamentally interesting to the rest of the world, and you know, his contribution is massive to weightlifting and basically every weightlifter in the world currently, or, you know, within the last 15 years, probably knows of Abjayev, what he did.
So you had a very, you know, unique situation in which you and Uncle Ivan were roommates for a bit.
We did actually live together when he was out in California early 2000, the first time he was here. I went over there. I applied to come down and train with him, and we ended up living. He wanted the lifters to live in the house with him. He refused to have anything less than that. It wasn't a matter of convenience. It was a matter of, you know, he wanted to keep an eye on everybody and have absolute control of the entire situation. So, you know, you had basically one day a week that you could leave the house, and that was Sunday. The other days, you know, you could possibly leave, I think, after training, but training didn't really end till late at night. And you know, it was an interesting experience. I mean, it was really interesting getting to see behind what the sort of, like, I don't want to say myth of him was, but it was very different as a person, you know, a very... He cared about his lifters a lot. You know, he didn't want people to get hurt. He wasn't just a let's grind them up and move on. It was just a very hard line, you know, this is how we're going to do it. This is the approach. This is the expectation and the standard. And you live up to that, or I guess you just don't want it. You know, I guess you just don't want to do this. So he was a very, Very interesting person for sure. Insane, without a doubt. Without a doubt, insane. But also just an intriguing personality for sure.
And had you guys had much contact between?
You know what?
Him moving back and
no, I mean he was really not like it wasn't really a good connection in terms of like being able to send emails and whatnot. Actually, one of the guys he had over. One of the, like, the scientist guy. That's what he called him, a scientist.
Yeah.
Who knows exactly what he was. He came over, and, you know, I actually, like, was friends with him on Facebook, and I communicated with him a little bit. And then, you know, through other people that have been over there, you know, back and forth, heard stuff. And then he was back here for a few years, or probably about a year, less than a year, where he was training that 77-kilo guy from Albania, you know, who went to the Olympics and then popped there, and then, you know, his career kind of just fizzled out. But, yeah, he was here, and I stopped by there and, you know, and spoke to him there. But there was some really, like, some of the insights that he had in terms of, like, talking. When you ask questions, he had a really interesting way of answering. He always thought, I think he was the kind of person who thought very differently about stuff than a lot of us. So his outlook on things was just sort of, like, twisted a little bit, not in a negative, but like just different than what you'd expect. So I remember this one time, really funny, that we were all sitting there and there was someone asked a question like, so hypothetically you have two identical people and what's the best exercise for them to do if they're just an athlete? What's the best thing, you know, for both of, like, one guy's going to be the shot putter, one guy's going to be a football player, like, what's the best exercise? And he was like really confused and kind of weird. And they're like, no, you have like two guys that are the same. And he gave, it was always through a translator. He gave like this, what, you know, like a comical, like a movie thing where it's like 2 minutes of speaking to the translator. And the translator turns to everyone and says, Mr. Abajayev says, no two people are the same. And that was like the answer to the question. And he couldn't get beyond that. He couldn't get beyond the fact that this hypothetical world someone had created to get an answer that they wanted was like, well, it's not possible. No two people are the same. So why are you asking the question? I always thought that kind of stuff was interesting. He would answer stuff like that a lot, you know, where you got a very different perspective, but more of a, it's just different, just very different. He was also, you know, the thought process. You have to imagine somebody who's had that much success has had so much reinforcement of what they do, and so much of that is you can't argue with it. You know, I mean, when someone has had 12 Olympic gold medalists, it's very difficult to challenge them. And he said that as he got older, he got frustrated with the fact that young coaches were always challenging him and challenging his methods and challenging his stuff, saying, oh, it's wrong, it's this or that. You know, I think he got very disappointed in the fact that it was, even though you've proved it, you have to keep proving it through some other, you know, well, now I have to explain why it works, even though I can show you, look, it works again and again and again. It's interesting. I mean, he's just a very interesting character for sure.
Do you think you watched our critique of Squat Every Day video?
That may have been what put him over. No, I don't think he was. I don't know. I mean, Shit, the guy was a coach for 50 years. You'd imagine the level of, like, I mean, 50 fucking years of coaching. And I had heard stories, too, where, like, he had a kidney problem at one point in time. He had some kind of health problem. He, like, blacked out in the gym. And they took him to the hospital. And he's in the hospital for a few hours. It's, like, between, like, at the beginning of the first workout. He's in the hospital. They're like, you can't leave. And he, like, forced, like, I'm fucking going back to the gym. I have to coach them in the evening. And came back from the hospital to, like, coach people.
I mean, that probably sums it up as well as any.
There it is. Right there.
That's Ivan Abajayev.
That's it for sure.
Leaving the hospital to make people squat to
just,
maximum.
Just because, I mean, just out of spite. He survived that long out of spite for weightlifters.
It's not like he had to tell them the workout. They knew what the workout was.
That's the thing, right? Everyone knows what they're going to do. And you know they're going to just fucking bullshit it if they can. That's what he knew. He knew they were not going to do it if he wasn't there.
It was like Pinky in the Brain.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? What are we going to do tonight, Coach Abajayev? The same thing we do every night, Max. Squat the maximum.
The maximum. Maybe 5 kilo more. Maybe five more. Yeah, it was incredible. He also did a lot of different stuff. I think the approach is really what's interesting, is like this really aggressive, really intense approach. You know, I think that's the thing that carries over most. It's, you know, the specifics of the program are not interesting or spectacularly, it's not entertaining to me. I think it's pretty obvious what's going on. But the approach and this very, like, wow, just simply the brute force method worked to get this country to levels that, you know, were unheard of before.
And I think a common misconception that people have about Bulgarian weightlifting, the Bulgarian method, the whole system of weightlifting in Bulgaria, is they get this picture that it's this put 1,000 in and get one
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's just not the case. Yeah. They didn't have that many.
A very small number of weightlifters.
6 million people in the whole country. And then we sat down one time, Martin Pashov and I sat down one time to figure it out. We were curious. And Martin went through in his mind all the different clubs he knew of, and he was like, well, there's probably only about like 10 people in that club or 15. And that includes all the people there. So he said, maybe there's 1,000 weightlifters in Bulgaria. And back in the early 70s, there may have been, let's even 10 times that, 10,000 lifters. That's not a huge population to say, or China might have 100,000 or, you know, essentially unlimited. Yeah, a million. I mean, in Russia at one point in time, I believe there was something like 400,000 weightlifters, or maybe in the entire Soviet Union. So, I mean, you're not talking about the biggest talent pool in the world. And I certainly don't know if Bulgaria, you know, in that area possesses anything special from a genetic standpoint that predisposes people to weightlifting. I mean, you know, it's hard to say. That would have to require a lot more research. But it's not like there's nothing really particularly amazing about that area where you'd say, oh, yeah, like we're like the United States has incredible genetic diversity, a massive population, incredible resources, you know, some kind of situation like that is very obvious why there would be success in sports. You know?
If they put 10,000 in and got 12 gold medals out the other side.
Yeah. Working with some rich soil there.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. A very monumental figure, someone who, you know, changed the game for weightlifting in a lot of ways. And, you know, he did buck the system that existed before him and just did it totally differently and has had, you know, a huge impact on weightlifting ever since.
Yeah.
Positives in there, negatives in there.
But, yeah, for sure.
So, you know, condolences to everyone in the Objev family and who was connected with him. So getting into a bit of Q&A. So from Instagram, at @NathanD_Lee, what should be the ratio of training front squat to back squat for weightlifting?
Just getting done with the Abhijayev lecture. That depends. As you're early in the training cycle, the further away from competition, less front squat, probably, let's say, twice as much back squatting as front squatting as you're far away. As you get closer, probably that switches around to twice as much front squatting as back squatting. Again, just depends. If you have low levels of general strength, more back squatting for longer in the training cycle. If you lack control or strength in the front rack, or you struggle in the clean, then more front squatting. Pretty straightforward there. Okay. Too much more.
Any other considerations like maybe body proportion or anything like that?
You know, if you have – okay, yeah, actually a good example would be like Kristen Pope on the team. She does only front squats now because back squats – I mean, she had some kind of hip injury that kind of precludes her from doing a lot of back squatting. But it's also probably a situation that would have happened at some point because, long legs, long femur, short torsoed people. It's easy for her to do a lot of back squats and generally rely on her back a little bit more, and so maybe not get as much out of them, where she would struggle to clean weights and struggle to stand with them. You know, doing more front squats is going to help her. It's going to transfer better. So, you know, more front squat for someone who might have more of a disposition to be getting less out of back squats.
So someone with relatively strong back to weaker legs needs to address the leg strength more for weightlifting.
Yep.
Is there any kind of like ratio that you're looking for of front squat to back squatting?
You know, a long time ago, so there's a lot of like ratio calculators. And a long time ago when I was more like a younger coach and like I used to think, oh, okay, like there's these like specific, like doing excessively strong in the front squat's not worth it. Or, you know, I used to be disheartened by the fact that I had a giant squat and small lifts. But at hearing some of the front squat numbers I've seen from lifters internationally, they are insane. And I would say that most likely the byproduct of intelligent training is going to produce very large levels of strength. If you're training properly and eating well, there's no reason why you wouldn't just continue to get very, very, very strong. So there's not going to be a ratio where you stop devoting energy to it because it's still relatively easy to develop. And it still is a part of the training process, you know. So there's really not a giant ratio of, like, how much you should front squat to clean. Always more than you clean.
What about front squat to back squat?
Front squat to back squat, you're probably going to, for a weightlifter, you're probably going to have a much closer value. You're probably going to front squat closer to your back squat than, like, a power lifter. Where, high bar, too, for both. Your front squat's probably going to be... the exact number, probably elusive, but I would say within 15 to 20% at minimum. If you front squat 120 and you back squat 140, you're a little bit, you're closer to like 85% there.
Let's say Colin is a relatively weak front squatter compared to his back squat.
Yeah, his back's very strong.
Lifters. So he's 227 in the front squat, 260 in the back squat.
87%.
87%, where someone like... Yeah, you know, I know D'Angelo was doing, what, 240 to 260, where his front squat was 92.
Yeah, so you're for a weightlifter, you're probably going to be over 85, 87% is a pretty good number. And then obviously if you're doing a lot of them and you're spending a lot of energy on it, then, yeah, you're going to have a bigger, a closer ratio, right?
Yeah, so if Colin is on the low end front squat to back squat with 87% and D'Angelo is on the higher end, with 92%,
I would say if your ratio is in the low 80s, your back squat is probably stronger than necessary, and it would make more sense to spend more time on front squats. Yeah, that's what I would. That's a good number. Low 80 percentile, below 82%, probably bring your front squat up a little bit to get closer to that 90% number.
All right, moving on to the next question, but staying with front squats. In Quads We Trust asks, are front squats useful for powerlifting? Are front squats a useful exercise to develop your quad strength? Most definitely. Are they necessary for powerlifting? Definitely not. The only things that are necessary, squat, you know, competition squat, bench, and deadlift, competition exercise for whatever sport we're talking about. Can they be useful? Yeah, they can certainly be useful to address quad strength if you can perform them well.
Yeah.
If, you know, your mobility is too limiting to perform the front squat well, it's no better an exercise for quad strength than belt squats, than leg press, that kind of stuff. If you're too limited by how you can load it because you can't hold it well or for whatever reason, and you can't create some good output in it and actually use decent weight, then you're probably violating principle of overload and it's not going to be that
right.
Useful.
That's probably the biggest caveat. I mean, you can, if you can't really effectively do the exercise with the rep ranges and the intensity you need, you're better off doing something that you can push to the end of that where you need it, right? Belt squats, hack squats, those kind of things are going to just make more sense, because if you're struggling to do a 315-pound front squat but you can back squat 650, you know, it's like you're not going to get a lot out of it, whereas you would get more out of belt squatting or hack squatting.
Yeah, and yeah, I would consider myself for a powerlifter a good front squatter. Well, at different times, I guess, in my powerlifting career. When I was doing strongman more and earlier in my powerlifting career, I pushed the front squat hard, and I really chased some numbers there, and front squat had like 675. So front squat 675 when I was back squatting in reps, I'd done 905, but let's say I was between 870 and 900. And I did 550 for 8 during that time and 675 for 1 in the front squat.
550 for 8 front squat is very, very impressive.
And the thank you. But then the as I got farther along in my powerlifting career and sort of dropped the front squat out or didn't emphasize it as much, I know the best front squat I did leading up to squatting either 959 or 970 was 585 for 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it can be useful, but with, like so many other more general or less specific exercises, it's probably not worth chasing the number. Chasing, all right, if I can front squat this much, yeah, if I can front squat 700, I'm going to back squat 900 or insert whatever numbers it is. The correlation might not be there, but it might be more if I do a good bit of front squatting in the, you know, 3 to 6, 4 to 8 rep range to build up the size and general strength of my quads, then I'm going to be able to take that and carry it over into peaking and use that quad strength with the more specific movements.
Yeah.
But, so it's not probably so much about the max in the front squat, but if you can perform it well, yes, it's going to be a useful exercise, but it's not an absolute. It's not totally necessary. It just,
it's a great exercise if you can do it. If you can't, there's other things that work as well.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to another question. Tyler Neeb, 44. What have been some challenges you faced in establishing Juggernaut, the gym and the team? And then advice for those attempting to establish and improve a university team. That could be an entire podcast in its own as far as challenges of running Juggernaut. I think it's the biggest things are going to be time management, is going to be creating structure and organization in trying to run the gym. Keep in mind that the gym part of Juggernaut is a very, very small part of what's going on. Our main business is this type of stuff, education, seminars, all the online content that you guys see. When it started Juggernaut, it was all about the gym. We were just a gym, and we had a website barely. If you could call it that. Yeah. And
I remember that.
That was like 2009.
Oh, okay.
The 2009, 2010. But I think what's really important is being active in the community. Active in the community, in whatever community you wanna grow in. If that's powerlifting or weightlifting, be at meets. Spot, load, coach, run the table, whatever it is that you can do. Be involved in that community and be a positive part of it. I think that's going to go a long way towards people gravitating towards you. Of course, providing an excellent service is also going to be very important there.
I can only really speak to the gym side of it as that's I own a gym too, but the gym,
creatively named one.
It's an extremely unique name. But what I would say is something to be careful of when you're establishing any of those things, especially when you're dealing with people, and you're dealing with people doing something that they really have a lot of emotion attached to. You're not selling a widget to somebody who just needs the widget to do the thing, right? You're not selling toasters. You're selling service, and you're selling yourself and what you do, and your name is on the product, and you're on the product. But you have to remember too is like a lot of that stuff people take very, very personally, and the biggest challenges in managing teams and gyms and all of those things is probably always going to come down to the people and keeping good people around, and helping manage those people and their jobs. You know, at the same time, the clientele you have in the gym and on the team and those things, you know, those people put a lot of their heart and soul into it, and you have to, for one, respect that, and two, you know, you have to establish where your boundaries are as a business owner or you know, as a coach, right? You can't run a gym effectively or run a team effectively if you are constantly in violation of different boundaries and, you know, different expectations, and you're giving too much of yourself to the gym or to the people, because you end up losing sight of or losing control of people's expectations, and they're going to end up, you know, demanding things that you shouldn't have been giving in the first place. You know, same at the same side, or the same, the other side of the coin is that you can't do the opposite and treat people poorly, expecting that they're going to give the best, you know, the best of themselves to you. So, I mean, leadership and behaving and treating people the way you believe is the right way to do it, and living up to that standard, I think, is a huge deal. You know, you see it all the time. Gyms are always, they're make and break on the people that are in them. I mean, that's a big thing.
Yeah, I think to that effect, because so much of it is, you know, it's about sets and reps and lifting technique, but it's more about relationships and working hard to foster, you know, positive community in the gym and the team is gonna be very important.
Yeah.
All right, let's take one more for today. I guess I'll ask my own one.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's right.
Throwing a curve.
Yeah. Ball. So for people who don't know, and you may have seen some posts on Instagram about this. One, it was Max's birthday last week, so we got to eat some very delicious dinners as part of that. Mm. But it was also about 1 year that Max has been here at Juggernaut. So yeah, late February, early March,
yeah.
Probably moved down here from Oakland. So what do you think has been the most challenging part of things, and what has been the most fun part of things in first year doing that stuff?
I would say the most challenging thing is the management of time and scheduling. I would say that early on, but I would say the most challenging thing is probably feeling like I was on the same, that I was up to par for the quality of what Juggernaut was putting out before I got here, and feeling like I was going to do a good job with, you know, the team and the lifters and those kind of things, because it was all it wasn't like a new situation, but it was a very different, much more legitimate and serious, and you know, while I have the experience and new things, it's just actually putting into play and putting into practice, I think, was probably the most challenging, believing that was going to go the way it should. And I feel like we've had some decent success so far. And what was the other side of the question? The other question?
What's been your favorite part? Or the most rewarding?
Certainly just being treated. This is the first place I would say I've been in all of my lifting career where I feel like I'm looked at as there's a mutual respect for who I am and what I do, from a lot of, from my peers, from Chad, and from, you know, the lifters around me and other people that I've run into and met, where I felt like I was put in a position or I was given a level of respect as a peer, rather than feeling like, you know, we're not on the same level or that kind of thing. I think that was a really like rewarding experience. And the most recent videos we've created, Commando was good, what's next ready, is better.
Ready yourselves, ready, internet.
Strap your balls on because it's going to be incredible. But yeah, I mean that you know, for sure. The entire experience has been incredible. I mean, I don't think, I mean, you know, Chad pushes me to do things that I wouldn't do on my own. You know,
like video intros and conclusions.
They're not; those are not good. They're just very challenging to do the closing statements.
When I ask you this question on the podcast next year, what's been the most challenging part of the
I'll
second
still be there.
Year? It's been mastering the video intros and conclusions. Yeah. Max seems to is when the camera turns
oh,
on.
Man, it's so.
He seems
much
to forget
more...
the name of his company, his job title.
The thing is, okay, so when you start recording and the name Juggernaut Training Systems comes into your mind, when the camera's on, there's like five extra words in there that I'm pretty sure I forgot to mention. So you always try to slip them in. Juggernaut Strength Training Systems, Juggernaut Conditioning and Strength and Systems.
Juggernaut Strength Emporium and House of Sausages.
House of Sausages. That'd be a good restaurant.
Juggernaut Strength Emporium and House of Sausages?
Jugger Sausage. Yeah, so I would say those are the...
I feel like that's more of a film than a restaurant.
Jugger Sausage 8. You don't need to see the first 7 to get the rest of the plot. Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's been awesome being part of it because it's very different. I mean, it's very real. It's completely transformational in my life and, you know, my family's life and just... Everything has been awesome. I mean, because of that, it's been all new challenges, exciting. I like the you know, one of the big things I really like is the variety of what we do. It's not just, you know, sit there and hack away at, like, you know, let's just get people in the door and do this, or let's just make drivel and shitty product or shitty information and content and just spew it out. And you know, there's actual passion and caring for what goes on. There's a standard that's upheld as to what, you know, gets put out. I think that kind of stuff is really cool. And there's a variety of it. You know, you're not just doing the same, you know, oh, we'll do this and that. I mean, you meet tons of awesome people. It's been awesome. I mean,
yeah. And yeah, I couldn't be happier with it. And I knew a year ago or a year and a half ago, yeah, not that I was an expert in, or am now an expert in weightlifting, but I had talked to enough weightlifting. I am an expert in training and being strong. And I talked to enough weightlifting coaches and seen enough training and things to know that, well, one, that you were definitely the coach I wanted to have. But I think I knew that almost more so than some of the weightlifters knew it.
Yeah,
they had,
yeah, for sure.
You know, this idea of, oh, Max Ada, the Bulgarian guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Max Ada, the power lifter.
Yeah, it's hard to get away from those things, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, where I felt like I could be this advocate for what I knew to be true, that Max Ada, the weightlifting coach, from just talking about training with you, was going to be extremely successful. And, that's, you know, cool. You'd produce some lifters and stuff, but even for, you know, maybe Colin and Courtney to some degree, there was this uncertainty.
Oh, for sure.
That they had, and, you know, that they had been at the Olympic Training Center and been with these coaches who had produced all these people. But I knew that there was, you know, maybe flaws in some of the things they had done. And from talking to you, I was like, I know this is the way that I want the program to be.
That's cool.
And, you know, I remember kind of half joking saying, as the team started to sort of come together, I was like, well, you know, are you ready for people to think, you know, are you ready for a year from now for people to think Max Ada is the best weightlifting coach in America? Because that's what I believe to be true.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm very excited to see people making the lifts. And I really think, you know, at the end of this year, there'll be a lot of people who start to think that.
Well, thank you.
So, well, enough of all this touchy-feely shit. We're not actually touching each other.
Chad's hand is in my pants right now.
No, no, no.
Yeah, no.
You're never wearing pants, so that would be impossible.
That's very cool. That means a lot.
So, yep. Well, there's your Q&A.
There you go.
Stuff coming up next weekend here at Juggernaut Squat Workshop. Me, Max, Marissa, come learn how to improve your technique, your program design. The weekend after that, Snatch Workshop with Marvelous Max Montana, Joanne Ada, as well as Colin and Courtney. I guess they know about snatching.
I mean, yeah, they're okay. They're okay at snatch.
Yeah, they've snatched a...
Man, they have got some serious... They both had two American records.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Pretty good snatchers.
Yeah. So come learn how to improve your technique and programming, assistance exercise selection for that. Then at the end of the month, myself, Dr. Quinn, Dr. Mike, and Dr. James will be in Arlington, Texas for the Juggernaut Performance Summit, teaching you about program design, nutrition, movement, and recovery. Pretty much the four most important things you need to know about to get people really strong. No seminars that come to mind in May. And then the first weekend in June, I will be in beautiful, cool, fun Austin, Texas, and Max will be across the state in College Station.
Shit,
which one
station
would you rather be at?
I feel like I'm bashing it and they're all going to hate me there. I'm actually excited to go there. I've never been to Texas willingly, period.
Well, we went to Texas for Nationals 2 years
yes,
ago
yeah.
And never left the hotel.
I was there for almost 10 days.
Because Masters
World Cup was there, so we had to be there like the week before for that. And, you know, Joanne's like the first weight class. So, like, I was in the hotel for 7-8 days total.
Yeah.
I don't think I left the doors at all.
Yeah, I think I was 3 or 4 days and definitely never left the hotel.
Yeah.
I pretty much just went from the room.
There's a potted plant there. Still remembers you very well.
To my front row seat. To the bar / restaurant. I think they had food, too.
Chad was manning the entire audience during Kane Wilkes' Clean and Jerk. That was awesome because, you know, it's like it's always the case. The supers get kind of the shitty audience because everyone's leaving.
Sunday, 2015 yeah. Nationals, Dallas Hilton, beautiful venue. That Sunday, we had Pomp in the 85s, the first session
yeah.
of the day. And then
he won that one, right?
Yeah. And then I think Ariel was in 69s after Ariel, him. Yeah. And then Colin was in the 94s. And then Jesse was in 75s. And then Donovan and Dave were in 105s. And it was a combined session, 105s and supers.
No, I think they were separate.
It was 105s. Yeah. And then it was 75 plus women. And then Supermen.
Yeah.
So I was in there for, what, 5 of 6 sessions that day.
That's like, 72 hours, in case you haven't figured it out.
I didn't leave the seat because I was sitting in the middle of the front row.
People were bringing you food.
Yeah,
people were bringing you drinks.
Yeah, bringing you food and drinks. So I didn't have to leave the seat. It wasn't until, like, the 75 women started, I had to get up to pee finally.
Yeah. And, I remember that.
But Kane, it was Kane lifted awesome. I could not be fucking
You could
pumped.
Hear, people were saying they could hear you on the live screen.
Well, they could hear me on the live stream when Colin got introduced.
Yes, and they made a mistake.
Yes, they made a mistake about who was the defending champion. Yeah,
in fact, Colin, not Kendrick.
Yeah, and I corrected them.
Yep. That was good. And then
quite vigorously.
He goes for the 2:30 clean and jerk, right? And you just stood up and were like, turned around to the audience, like, get on your feet, it's 500 pounds. Like, you know, it was a big deal. And then, you know, what, 27 people stood up.
Yeah.
It was actually a pretty decent showing for the third session, the final session.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'd been in there maybe 10, 12 hours.
Yeah. Huge supporter.
And people were like, what the fuck is that powerlifter? You know, what's the powerlifter doing?
I will say that's kind of a funny thing. That's one thing I've always thought was really cool about Chad. And just in general, you don't see a lot of people that stick around the whole thing, that just commit to it. Like, you'll have coaches there that show up with a couple of lifters. They go in, they get out, they're done. I mean, there's some of these meets that we're going to where, I mean, AO was like, literally, I might as well have just put a sleeping bag in the warm-up room because we had, like, 21 lifters there. This last AO we just went to had 28 people. And, you know, a lot of these things, too, Chad will be there at there. And, like, you know, they're not like, just fucking around. I mean, you're sitting in the audience. You're involved in the entire process. So as a team,
Well, now they're letting me in the back room. So
well, now, yeah, now he's in the back room, so it's chaos. But yeah, I mean, that's a pretty awesome, like, lead from the front mentality that, you know, with the earlier question that I was asking, like, that's the first thing I would say is the most important is lead from the front.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've told our weightlifters many times. I maybe minus their parents and their significant other. I mean, I'm not a bigger fan of Colin than Courtney is.
No, that's not possible.
At least in terms of, it's not like I'm a 13-year-old girl at an NSYNC concert in 1999. That is what Courtney's like when watching Colin lift weights. Yeah. But I'm definitely Colin's second biggest fan, and I'm trying to be everyone's on the team's biggest fan. And yeah, I want to see him lift a lot. I want to see everyone lift a lot.
Yeah,
I just want to see us lift the most.
Well, we're working on it.
So, yeah, back to seminars. Check those out. Store.jtsstrength.com in the events section. Then we have all kinds of online coaching, different levels, club, team, one-on-one. That's basically just a general program is club. Everyone's on the same program. Team, we have a lot of different templates created based on the lifter's, you know, strength, experience, gender, training frequency, and for weightlifting, kind of, you know, their needs in terms of more technique, more strength. And then one-on-one is a one-on-one fully custom program. So you could work with me, Max, Marissa, Colin, Pomp, Courtney, Andy Huang, Kristen Dunsmore, and I think that was everyone. Yeah,
I believe so.
So go check those out if you're interested in very, very good, effective programs and a good community to be part of there. Beyond that, if you like the podcast, go give it a 5-star review on iTunes, write it a funny review. We really appreciate seeing that stuff, and it does help us get up on the list so more people can check this podcast out, as well as launching next week. You can find this podcast at thejuglife.com. So we'll have all the episodes there, plus some bonus content. You'll also very soon be able to check out and be able to buy shirts from some of our favorite sponsors, like Milligrams and Kilograms, Pints and PRs, Pop-Tarts and Power Cleans, maybe some special Jug Life shirts, maybe a Notorious MAX shirt. Who knows? Who knows what thejuglife.com will have? Well, actually, I do. It's going to have those things that I just said.
Spoiler alert.
So Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Max_Ada. You can find me on Facebook. You can send an email directly to me asking about any of the online coaching programs, any of the different questions you have in regards to whether or not what program is right for you, et cetera, max@jtsstrength.com. See, like I said, it's fine there. And, yeah.
I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Filling up your news feed all day. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and head over to our YouTube and subscribe to our channel there. New video went up today. Max, Kristen Pope teaching Meg squats how to snatch, so go check that out. And we're very proud of the content we produce for YouTube and hope that it's helping you become a better lifter and coach. Thanks for listening. Oh, yeah. Now the Jug Life is shifting from Thursdays to Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, you'll get an audio episode, which you can find at thejuglife.com on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Plus, there will now always be a video episode. So I know we've done a few in the past, but now we're committed to every week videos edited by our man, Shorty Sedang. He's probably the strongest video man in the world.
By far the strongest videographer.
Without ever. A doubt.
Yeah.
It's only 130 pounds. He's strong as shit.
He's very strong.
So be looking for those videos coming at you starting next Tuesday, April 4th, every Tuesday. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and thejuglife.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.